and welcome to Aviation Safety Magazine's continuing audiocast series on topics of risk management and accident prevention in general aviation. Here is Aviation Safety's Editor-in-Chief, Jeb Burnside.
With me today is Robert Sumwalt, Vice Chairman of the National Transportation Safety Board. Bob is going to talk to us a little bit about general aviation safety. I know Bob from a kind of a previous life, some presentations he has made. One of those presentations was back in June where we talked about safety culture. The safety culture being talked about basically had to do with corporations, organizations where there's a large number of people, generally flying general aviation aircraft, but perhaps even larger aircraft requiring two crew members. How long have you been with the NTSB?
I was appointed by the president in August of 2006, so I've been there now about 14 months.
And your appointment to the board is for how long?
I've got I filled an unexpired term of a former board member, and then I have a full 5 years on top of that.
I see.
So my appointment ends December 31st, 2011.
What do you hope to achieve during your tenure at the NTSB?
Well, I think the board is a wonderful organization. They've been in existence now for 40 years, and I think that what I want to do is make sure that the quality of our investigations remains very high. And I think that every board member, there are five board members appointed by the president, and each board member brings a different perspective. And a perspective that I bring is that I believe, yes, when we hear about pilot error or maintenance error or air traffic controller error, yes, those people may have been the last person who committed the last mistake in an accident chain. But I like to go back and try and understand what might be the factors that may have influenced those decisions by those frontline operators. You know, we had a rail accident that we dealt with a few weeks ago, and the track was improperly inspected, and so the tendency would be to go out and say, well, the track inspectors didn't do their job. But when we peel back the layers of the onion there, we find out that there were all kinds of organizational issues that were deficient, and there were regulatory agency deficiencies as well. So I want to go back and not just be satisfied with the obvious answer. I want to try and understand not only what happened in an accident, but I want to understand why it happened as well.
How can we apply that kind of methodology and that kind of what I would call onion layer peeling to our general aviation operations? How can the normal rank and file private pilot flying his or her own airplane think about these different layers leading to an accident before he or she gets in the airplane?
I look at it as an onion, and I also look at it as like layers of Swiss cheese. And I didn't invent this myself. Mm-hmm. This mainly comes from the work of Dr. Jim Reason, but he does have what he calls the Swiss cheese model, where there are several layers of defense that are out there designed to help keep us from having accidents. But unfortunately, each of these layers of the Swiss cheese ends up with a hole in them, and when the holes align is when we have an accident trajectory, something that can penetrate each of those layers that leads to the accident. And so it is true that the pilots may be one of the last layers of defense, but there are other layers of defense in the system that should keep us from having accidents. And it could be that it's just a chain of things. We're running late. Like this morning, I was supposed to be downtown for a meeting at 8:30, but at 7:30, my wife says, "Oh, can you take our daughter to school because she's missed the school bus?" And now I'm rushing, and then let's say the weather is not so good, and let's say that this is the day that I've called the FBO to tell them to fuel my airplane, but something happens there, and they haven't fueled my airplane, and just a series of things come together that if any one of those would have been different, the accident sequence might have been different. So it is important to just sort of look at our aviation system as a system, multiple layers of defense to keep us from having an accident, and it's when we have a hole in each of those layers of defense that we end up in a bad situation.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, in your background, you've seen a lot of different ways that a culture, an organizational culture, can favorably and perhaps unfavorably impact safety. Are there any lessons that you've learned from looking at the ways different organizations approach these issues?
Yes, and culture is, and we have found this at the Safety Board over the 40 years that we have been in business, that sometimes the most common link, the most common factor among all these accidents is the corporate leadership's viewpoint towards safety. Those companies, those organizations that have the greatest commitment to safety are those who have the fewer number of accidents. That's not to say that bad things can't happen to good people.
Sure.
But generally, culture is a very important, safety culture is a very important predictor of how that organization is going to do withstanding bad things happening to it.
I'm coming back to a theme here, and that is, of course, how to translate some of this down to the owner flown level. Is there a warning sign or a group of warning signs that a general aviation pilot could think of or try to remember as a stop sign or a warning sign, a yield sign perhaps, he or she should not pass when confronting a situation?
I do think so, and I think that I don't have a complete list, but we can talk about a few of the things that just really raise red flags for me, and that is that when we find, one would be that we intentionally start deviating from standard operating procedures or regulations. I think that should be a red flag, because again, we found that at least in the airline business, and I don't have any reason to believe that it would be significantly different in general aviation, but once we start intentionally deviating from those procedures, we're about three times more likely to commit another error that has consequential results. And those are the errors we're worried about, is those with consequential results. Mm-hmm. And so when you start saying, well, I know I'm supposed to be 500 feet below that cloud to remain legal, but I'm just going to remain clear of clouds today because I need to kind of do a little scud running.
Mm-hmm.
When we start deviating from those procedures, when we start thinking of deviating those procedures, that should be the red flag to us right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
When we start feeling overconfident, and that's another thing, is that aviation has a way of humbling us, and I've found that over the years from personal experience. But when we feel like, oh, this is no problem, when we start saying things, to ourselves like, this is a piece of cake,
mm-hmm.
I'd let the hair on the back of your head start standing up on those things also. Those
sure.
are just a couple of things, and we could probably go on and on, but those are a couple of things that come to my mind.
Okay. Very good. What's the future going to look like at the NTSB? But more importantly, what kinds of things will the NTSB be looking at in the future relative to general aviation? And where will we go from here as a community, as an industry, especially, obviously, on the safety front?
Well, I'm very excited about the future. I think that there's a bright future for aviation. And I hope to see a future for the NTSB where we are sitting around playing cards with the Maytag repairman because we've got nothing to do. And I hope that we can get to that status. In the meantime, there are some great advances out there that can help us. They are now becoming some very lightweight aircraft recorders, things that are just the size of maybe a couple of inches wide by a couple of inches wide. These are small recorders that can be placed in general aviation airplanes, just like the major airlines have now. As you know, the major airlines now go out and routinely scan their flight data. They have the crash recorders, the black boxes that we know about, but they also have a set of recorders that they routinely use to download parameters from each and every flight, so they can look and see where things might be precursors to accidents.
And some of that data is transmitted real time. The people on the ground know more about it than the flight crew.
Absolutely. And as a result of that, we can figure out in the airline business, well, gosh, we're having a real problem with unstabilized approaches at this airport. And then now, armed with that problem, with knowledge of that problem, you can go back and try and figure out why you're having those problems. And I think the same technology is now becoming available for us to put in a very cost-effective manner these small recorders in general aviation airplanes. And I believe that is Eclipse not doing that? I think they are.
I believe they are. I certainly the. For lack of a better term, the architecture of their system would allow that. And in fact, that kind of basic data collection is going on a number of levels within the general aviation community. For example, frequently in looking at NTSB reports, and I frankly look at way too many of them, there will be a mention of the pilot was carrying a portable GPS navigator. And that navigator obviously stores track data, stores data relative to each flight. And that data is then looked at perhaps by the GPS navigator's manufacturer and extracted and given back to the NTSB to help the board in its investigation determine what happened, when it happened, things of this sort. You also have memory capacity in some of the newer instrumentation, even on a low-end piston airplane that, for example, monitors the various parameters recorded by an engine monitor. And that data can be looked at, can be downloaded. As we increasingly go to these glass cockpits and electronic or electromechanical instrumentation, there's obviously a capacity to record that data and look at it later down the road for operational purposes, for accident investigation purposes, or for other purposes. We're getting to that point in a lot of different ways. Does any of this raise any privacy issues? Does any of this raise a regulatory issue? One question obviously would come to mind would be, should any of this equipment be required at any point by the government on a Part 91 aircraft that does not now have that requirement?
Always good questions, and there are privacy concerns, and the way that the airlines have dealt with that would be that the data will only be used in a de-identified fashion. We want to find out where our systemic problems are. We don't really want to focus in on individual performance. If we've got a rogue pilot out there, we will know about that through other means. But we want to find out where the error, where the problems are in the system. Mm-hmm. For example, the unstabilized approaches on runway 36 right at XYZ Airport. We're having a lot of unstabilized approaches there. Let's find out why and correct the problem. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to go after the individual pilot, because if we do that, then we're gonna cover up the fact that there's systemic flaws with that particular problem.
Right.
So there are privacy issues, and the airlines have dealt with that very well, and so much so that the pilots' unions are always involved in the reading of this data. And the data are de-identified. Now, on the Part 91 side, the safety board has typically taken the approach that it's not up to us to regulate heavily for Part 91, but when we start getting into when people are paying money to fly on an airplane, mm-hmm. for example, Part 121, 135, even Part 91 Subpart K, which, mm-hmm. of course, is the fractional operators, we do feel, and this from a legal point of view, those people are held to a higher standard than if you go out and you fly your own Cessna 172 around on a Saturday afternoon.
Right.
But we feel also, no, not we, but I personally feel that this could be a value, that having flight data recorder capability could be a very important educational tool. If you had a flight school, and you're letting somebody go out in solo, it'd be great to, at the end of the flight, come in, plug in the data chip into a computer, play it back, and say, okay, now look, I know you're out there practicing your turns about a point, but let's look. Here's where you needed to steepen up your bank. Here's where you needed to shallow the bank. And I think that'd be a great learning tool. The person is out there flying, but he or she has the advantage of looking retrospectively at a flight with an instructor, even though the instructor is not in the airplane at the time that the pilot is out there practicing. So I think that there can be some great enhancements to the way that we conduct training, and the better trained a pilot is, hopefully the safer that pilot is going to be.
Let me ask this. Is there anything that you would want to share with our readers, with our listeners? Any final comment or remark or challenge or anything like that?
Well, thank you for that opportunity. I think that we become safer pilots by learning mistakes of others. It was, I think, Ralph Waldo Emerson that said, learn from the mistakes of others. You won't live long enough to make them all yourself. And that's true. And the way that we learn from others is through publications such as Aviation Safety Magazine, that we can learn and educate ourselves. And I think that's an important mission that you're fulfilling there at your magazine. And I think it's an important mission that the readers need to read these lessons so that they can keep those things from happening in their own operation. I hope that we have given you something that you can use, and keep up the great work.
Definitely you have, Bob, and I sincerely do appreciate it, both personally and professionally.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bob. Take care. Yep. Have a great day.
And that's the NTSB's Robert Sumwalt. For more information on general aviation accident prevention and risk management, log on to www.aviationsafetymagazine.com or subscribe to Aviation Safety Magazine. Comments on this audiocast welcome at audionews@avweb.com. Thanks for listening.